It's Friday, 20th of November, 2020, and you're welcome to this podcast from Black Knight, the web hosting, domains, cloud and broadband company with an empty office in Carlow because all our staff are working from home. My name's Conor Muinichon, and today we're going to look back at Irish internet history. It's 20 years since .ie was set up as a separate company to manage Irish domain registrations. The company has kicked off its celebrations this month with a €20,000 cash giveaway. One of the things that happened in that 20 years was that Black Knight was founded and has grown to become the leading registrar of .ie domain names. One in four new .ie names is registered with Black Knight. So, .ie asked if I could interview Black Knight's founder and CEO, Michaela Nealon, to mark the occasion. We got on a Zoom call from our homes for a walk down the Irish internet's memory lane. Incidentally, this episode is on video as well as audio. You can find the video on our site at blackknight.blog/podcast. Michaela, thanks for coming on the call. We're having a chat today to, I suppose, mark the fact that the IE domain registry is now 20 years old. It's 20 years since it was set up as a formal company. Before that, arrangements were a little bit more ad hoc. You had to go to the computer science department in UCD to register a domain name, and I'm sure they had better things to be doing at the time. It's an occasion, in a way, not just to mark the 20th anniversary of .ie as a separate company, but also the 20th, to mark the growth of the Irish internet in general. Can I ask you, Michaela, when you first encountered the internet yourself? Because obviously it made an impression on you. You went on to found a company and become an internet kingpin, as some people have described you.
Yeah, well, I've been described as a lot of things. So when I was in first year at university back in 1994, I was given an email address, and I was able to access the email from pretty much any computer in the university at the time, but you couldn't actually browse the internet directly. Mm-hmm. There were two banks of computers that were available for browsing the internet freely from 6 o'clock in the evening till about 9 or 10 o'clock at night. Mm. The rest of the time, you had no direct internet access. So I used to do things like using an email to web gateway, which was run from a server. I think it was in UCC. Mm. And you would send an email to a specific address, and basically, you were sending it like curl and wget type commands, kind of saying, you know, fetch me the front page of the Irish Times, and then hit refresh, wait a couple of minutes, then you get a response back, and then in your inbox you'd have the front page of the Irish Times. But you couldn't click on a hyperlink. Mm. So you had to do then is you would then send it a follow-up email saying, you know, get me, and then you would put in the full address of the article that you wanted to read. It was a bit slow, but that was how I used to access the internet back in 1994.
Wasn't it extraordinary? And you're describing, this was in the University of Limerick, Michaela, is that right?
Yeah.
And what you're describing, I experienced in University College Galway, now NUI Galway. Other people did around the country as well, and I'm sure around the world as well. Isn't it extraordinary how, I won't say how guarded, but yeah, how nervous, I think, college authorities were about this technology, in a way, as if they appreciated how incredibly revolutionary it was to be able to access information from any place at a time. But obviously, they felt it was something that had to be policed.
I don't know if that's really true. I don't think they had the resources.
Yeah,
I mean, the UL at the time, I think it was some part of the computer science department or something had built a kind of a social network, which was accessible to all students from any computer terminal in the on campus, but it didn't have external access. I mean, you couldn't send an email outside of it, you couldn't access anything else. But they had done quite a few things like that over the years. But you know, unless your course involved something to do with computers. You really wouldn't have been using a computer at the time anyway. I mean, this is back when even the most basic of, well, actually, let me think about it again. No computer that you would have bought in a shop would have had the ability to connect to the internet. If you wanted to connect to the internet, you would have had to have bought some kind of modem and add the modem to the computer, even if it was brand new. Like, I mean, I remember, you know, years later getting laptops, and I'll admit they weren't brand new laptops because we didn't have any money, but, you know, getting a laptop and having to get a kind of a dongle type thing to plug into it so that you'd be able to get wireless access. I mean, the kind of things that are available in the iPhone sitting in front of me on the desk, you know, that iPhone is probably, I don't know, 100 times more powerful than the desktop computer I bought back in 1998. I mean, you know, the technology has evolved way beyond anything that we could possibly have imagined.
I suppose I'm just trying to sort of set the scene and remind people, and some people indeed are too young to remember or weren't even born in those days, but of how revolutionary it was and how things were, I suppose, pre-internet. I remember in the mid to late 90s designing web pages for people just because I could, and just trying to play with this technology and figure it out and see what the options were. Getting hurling matches broadcast using, oh, what was it called? That early live streaming technology. I forget it now. I can't even remember the name.
Real video or something.
Real player, real audio, real video. That's right. Yeah. And getting all of that.
I don't know if that's even still around. I mean, is that completely gone?
This is there's been winners and losers along the way. And of course, things have been rebranded and stuff as well. Let's jump forward to the year 2000. Obviously, things are picking up pace here. This is when the decision is made to set up .ie as a separate company in order to manage the .ie domain registrations. Where were you in 2000, Michele? And what kind of impact was the internet having on your life at that time?
So 2000, I was in Milan in Italy. 2000, I would have been teaching English as a foreign language. At that stage, I did have my own computer, thankfully, and I did have some kind of internet connection both at home and at work. So, yeah, I mean, back then, it definitely had become a much more important part of our lives. But nothing like what it is now. I mean, it was definitely one of those things where, you know, companies would have had websites. That wasn't such a strange concept at that stage. Banks had gone online to a degree. I mean, what was available probably wasn't that great, but it was available. And I think at that stage I was able to book flights online. I mean, Ryanair and several of the others would have been offering online bookings. Because I remember the first iterations of like the likes of Aer Lingus and a few of the others several years earlier. They were informational. You couldn't actually buy flights. You could just get information about them, and being able to actually book flights was a whole other thing. I mean, some of these things seem to kind of come very quickly, other things much more slowly.
I remember the early noughties, sometime between 2000 and 2003. I remember going on a holiday to France. I remember booking my flight online, booking my car rental online, booking my TGV train tickets online, and all my accommodation. In fact, I remember travelling with a sheaf of printouts stapled together And every reception desk I walked up to, I simply showed them the relevant printout and was able to work. I mean, you wouldn't even operate with paper nowadays, but at least it was a huge step forward to have been able to do all that, because let's face it, this is what travel agents were kept busy doing up until those days. Already things were taking effect. Any particular websites that stand out for you, Michele, as from let's say the year 2000, early noughties, that either are or still aren't around nowadays? I was talking to one of my kids this morning, for example, and he was telling me about a story that he'd come across on The Onion. And I said, do you have any idea how old The Onion actually is? I recall reading The Onion back in 2000 and that as well. So it's interesting. What about yourself?
I'm not really sure. I mean, I think one of the things was when I was living in Milan. Mm. So I probably was accessing things like the Irish Times and the Examiner online to kind of keep track at some level of what was going on in Ireland. Mm. I'm not sure if there were any kind of websites specifically that I would have been more tied to than others, but I suppose there probably were. Mm. I think it's at the time I was probably doing a lot more on mailing lists than yes. on specific websites. I yeah. mean, you know, if you got to remember back in 2000, forums were huge. I mean, this is before Facebook. This is before Twitter or Instagram or any of those things. So I think forums would have been big. So like boards.ie would have been one that a lot of people would have been on. I mean, there's so many other ones. I mean, there was P45.net.
That's still around.
Another one. No, it's gone.
Oh, is it? Oh, wow.
I think it's gone.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, think of things like if you look at like, so the technology news sites, like in Ireland, I think one of the bigger ones back around then would have been ENN.
Yes.
Which is long gone.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, the mailing lists, and I'm still on a lot of mailing yes. lists, but I think the way that back then it was a mixture of both social work and technical and everything else, whereas now most mailing lists that people like myself are still on are much more work oriented. You don't go to a mailing list to swap jokes. You don't go to a mailing list to share, you know, photos of your recent adventures, which of course in 2020 is probably I went from the couch to the kitchen. It was amazing. How was your kitchen?
In Milan in the year 2000, Michele, what were you on? Did you have dial-up? Did you have broadband? What kind of connection did you have?
Good question. So back, that was one of the things I think there was a massive culture shock for me when I came back to Ireland a couple of years later. So in Italy, there was a company, I think they're still around, but I'm not sure if they've been bought or whatever, that was rolling out a massive fiber network. Mm. And this is back, they're still around, yes. So Fastweb were this new telco company, and that was really focused on fiber.
Mm-hmm.
So what they had done is they just kind of said, right, we're just going to lay fiber everywhere. And that's what they tried to do. And they did a pretty good job. So they had some kind of fast internet access into almost every single building in Milan.
Mm.
And even by today's standards, it was pretty damn fast.
Yeah.
I mean, so back in 2000, 2001, you were able to get a couple of hundred megabits into an apartment in the center of Milan, and it was a beautiful process, because you'd contact Fastweb and say, hey, I want to get this. They'd go, do you have a phone line? And if you went no, they'd go, well, that's grand, no problem. So Telecom Italia would come in at say 8 o'clock in the morning, hook you up, and a 8:15 Fastweb would come in, take the line off Telecom Italia. Mm-hmm. And this was like, you know, done. Whereas here in Ireland at the time, you know, this was when you had Ireland Offline, and it was all this kind of massive battle between the incumbent telco, telcos, but there was one in particular,
yeah.
And you know, this kind of battle over that last mile and, you know, the kind of access to broadband. So when I came back to Ireland in 2003, I went from having super fast fiber internet into my apartment to having to spend the first few months I was here on, well, you know, the kind of fairly slow DSL.
Yeah.
And at one point I was even on dial-up.
Yeah.
Which was a lot of fun in a sort of smack my head against the desk repeatedly sort of way.
Yeah.
Trying to run a company off 56K dial-up is not easy.
Yeah, you came home from Milan, Michele, and you and Paul Kelly set up Black Knight. You were selling domain names, you were selling hosting. We're in a very different time nowadays. .ie, for example, have reported that there's been a 40% increase in sales of registration of new .ie domain names in the last 6 months. But I want to ask you about the early days of, and I know this is something you have evangelized for a long time. I want to ask you about the early days of telling customers, or not so much persuading customers, but telling customers that they needed to register their own domain name, that they couldn't be just iol.ie/tilde, whatever it was. And I remember those days very well indeed. Things have changed an awful lot since then. I remember working at a small business, and they were astonished to think that they could actually register their own .ie domain name and have it themselves. What was it like in those days?
Well, I mean, I think that it was, you know, I don't know how to kind of clearly articulate this one. I mean, there's a number of different things that were very, very different.
Mm.
I mean, first off, there wasn't, if you've got to think about how the internet interacted with our daily lives back, you know, 20 odd years ago.
Mm.
And the short answer is it really didn't. I mean, bear in mind, you didn't have smartphones because, you know, you had phones at the time that had what they called GPS, which was a way of having a data connection on your mobile device, but it was incredibly slow, and the phones themselves couldn't do anything more than black and white.
Mm.
I mean, it was black and white. It was really low quality. Now, there was actually an entire section of the internet which was designed for these phones, including porn.
Mm.
So you could have black and white porn on your phone, because obviously men are involved, so of course you're going to have porn. But I mean, it was the most bizarre thing anyway. But I mean, the reason I mention that is because ultimately the driver behind it, a lot of this stuff is how it interacts with your day-to-day life. I mean, if you think back then, only larger companies would have had a serious online presence. Smaller companies would probably have had, if anything, it'd be just a very, very simple one or two page website. Everybody's internet connections were slower. I think a lot of businesses were just using email.
Mm.
Which, of course, was and still is the killer app. I mean, email is king in many respects. And the pricing was so different.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, back in the early 2000s, registering a .com domain name, you'd probably pay between $25 and $50. Registering a .ie domain name, it was between about 60 and 100 euro, give or take. A hosting package, which would have given you what it, by today's standards, was a tiny, tiny amount of space and a tiny amount of bandwidth. It was several hundred euro.
Mm.
So, I mean, all in, without paying a designer, without having anybody do anything, you were probably looking at several hundred euro a year just to even to dip your toe in us. I mean, it was not a cheap game. I mean, it was something like it was only a very small number of weirdos like me who would have had their own personal websites back then. I mean, it was not something that the average punter would even have considered. I mean, the if people were going to get their own website, I suppose they might have gone to the likes of, say, GeoCities or one of those kind of services that were still quite popular. I mean, I think that that was kind of still going on over in the corner. Mm. So, I mean, it was a different kind of setup. I mean, you mentioned, the IOL Tilde accounts, the Aircom ones in Italy. It would have, they would have had Fastweb gave you WebSpace. Actually, Fastweb were even doing things like testing IPv6 back then. And other Italian ISPs were also giving away kind of basic web space. So, I mean, a lot of, like, I remember seeing businesses in Italy and in Ireland where, the website that they were advertising was going to be a free address. It wasn't an actual domain name. Mm. I mean, fast forward 20 years and you're seeing the same problem, but now they're advertising a Facebook page or an Instagram handle or a YouTube account. And it's the same kind of problem, but probably worse in many respects. Mm. So it's, I suppose it has evolved. I mean, I think the costs and the accessibility has also changed massively.
It has, and it's changed. We're talking about marking the 20th anniversary of .ie as a separate company, Michele, it's worth mentioning that. And again, going back to my own experience as working in a small business, I remember a discussion with senior management in that business how they had contacted UCD and told that yes, they could register the name because they were entitled to it because they had a claim to the name based on the name of their business and the name of their company and who they represented and all that kind of thing. You mentioned the cost of a .ie name in the year 2000 and that. All of that has been massively simplified and deregulated, especially in the last couple of years. And it's now much, much easier and much, much quicker to register a .ie name. It's a symptom, or I suppose it's an example of how the internet really has got much more every day, and we're not making such a fuss about things anymore, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, we look at how things evolved over the years. Like, even for a .com domain name back in the early days, it was completely manual. You had to send in a fax into Network Solutions, NSI, and they would then manually go off and register that domain name to you in some kind of database of sorts. And up until quite recently, and I think you'll still find them with some of the smaller country codes, it's still terribly manual. It's not something that has been automated in any way. And I don't know about deregulation is really the correct term to use. I think I would just say it's just become simpler.
Yes.
Because, I mean, regulation to me suggests that there's some kind of government agency saying you must do this. And that's not what's been going on with a lot of the domains. In many cases, it's just, you look at the history. Many of the country codes were set up in universities, academia, by people who are not commercially minded. I mean, they're not thinking about the economics. They approach everything as if it's some kind of research project or something. I don't know. I mean, they're not practical or pragmatic about these things. So so there was a certain degree of bureaucracy with a lot of these domains, and over time it's become simpler. And if you look at the more successful domain extensions, they're the ones that have the simplest registration policies, the competitive pricing, and that are stable and robust. Because, you look at some of them and they might get tick two out of the three boxes, but if they're missing the third, that's where it starts to fall apart. I mean, if you think of it as like a stool, a two-legged stool won't really help you too much. I mean, you definitely need that third leg. And, the thing with .ie is that, the wholesale price has come down quite a bit. it's still higher than it should be. It's still higher than many of the European domain extensions. But unfortunately, the public don't know this because companies such as ourselves, we're eating that cost. We're actually subsidizing the new registrations. So, I mean, if you know, for .ie to actually become a real competitor for .com and for and against .eu and some of the other European country codes, that wholesale price really does need to come down. And with this, with the upcoming changes that they're going to be making in the next month or so, where they're moving to a totally new back-end system that is based on the same kind of systems used by many of the other domain registries, you know, that excuse for maintaining those high wholesale price, I think a lot of that's gone. It's just going away. From our perspective, we think that the price of a .ie domain name needs to come down to be on par with what we pay for a .eu.
We've talked about the progress really that's been made, accelerated, I think, over the last 10 years or so, Michele, and it's astonishing. We're talking about 20 years. You look back 10 years even, how ubiquitous internet has become, how essential to everybody's lives, how there's been the growth of things like remote working and stuff like that. And then suddenly, bang, 2020, bump in the road, step change. It's actually early days, really, Michele, at this stage, isn't it, to predict or to assess the impact that that pandemic and all of this new change and new ways of working have had on us. But what are your thoughts at this stage after 6 months of it?
6 months? Well, 7 months in.
7 months, I guess.
Seven months heading towards eight. I mean, it's one of those things where I think we've still fully kind of internalized it. I don't think we've fully embraced it. And I don't think anybody has realistically. Mm. And we're still having those kind of conversations as if what we were doing previously was the norm. What we're doing now is not the norm. And we're trying to kind of get ourselves back to that norm. You know, that it's that we're trying to get back. And I think at this stage, it's hard for us, but I think we need to accept that what we were doing previously is gone.
Yeah.
It's never coming back. So I think in some ways, I mean, there's different angles to this, but if you can think of this in some ways as being like the digital revolution that nobody wanted. I mean, this is not how I wanted the world to go online. Mm. I mean, the other side of me is kind of going, oh, this is amazing. It's great. You know, it's Christmas. My Christmases have all come together. Businesses are embracing online like never before. They're trying to, they all want to do those things that we've been saying that they should have been doing for years. They're now doing it. But this isn't how we wanted it. I mean, the thing is, that you need to kind of get that balance. You need to be able to, you know, it's you need to have a kind of a gradual kind of a balancing type thing where, you know, the new rises, the old recedes gently. Yeah. I mean, it's like
the Chinese curse, Michele. May you live in interesting times. I mean, nobody wanted to do this way, but like it or not, change has been thrust upon people. And just to say, even at this stage, eight months in, we do have data. I mean, there is an extraordinary rise in .ie domain registrations. We're seeing a rise in people buying hosting and online shopping products and things like that. And we're seeing a huge, indeed, in our broadband business, in our transit business, we're seeing a huge increase in internet traffic. There's a demand for infrastructure and for technology and for connectivity like never before.
Yes, but the thing is that, you know, if you think of, like, say, the when the motor car was first introduced, you know, horse-drawn carriages were still in use. Mm. And over a period of, like, 50 or 60 years, certain professions waned. I mean, you know, you don't, it would be hard to find certain professions these days. I mean, they still exist, but the demand is much lower.
Those jobs have been replaced by other kinds of jobs. And I suppose the point...
But it happened over time.
It happened gradually, yeah.
It happened over time. So you didn't have a situation where hundreds of thousands of people woke up one morning to discover that their jobs no longer existed. Mm-hmm. I mean, you talk about, when you talk about, you know, the history of something, you know, people use these kind of broad sweeping statements. You know, they woke up one day and the world had changed. Mm-hmm. Whereas in reality, what they mean is that this one day thing is probably over a period of, you know, 3, 4, 5 years.
And when it does happen, in one day, you're talking the stuff of disaster movies, really. I mean, things that happen in one day are traumas for people.
The thing at the moment is, like, you know, at the moment we're in lockdown level 5, lockdown 2.0. I don't know what the hell we're meant to come up with names for the damn thing. And for those of us working in this space, our day-to-day lives aren't changed that dramatically. Like, we can still work. You've been working from West Clare since forever. The only thing that's changed is you've got a better internet connection these days than you did have 10 years ago. I mean, that's probably it. And maybe you've got nicer coffee. I don't know. The thing is, you know, that it hasn't... I'm working from home, but what has changed is when I go outside and I go from here over to our offices to collect mail or something like that, and you see, like, all these businesses that are completely shut down.
Yeah.
Or, like, there's an electrical goods shop that I drive past between here and the office. Mm-hmm. And you can't walk in the door of that place these days. You haven't been able to walk in the front door of that place in months. Mm. You go up to the front door, and one of the staff will kind of challenge you. And then you're accompanied to a particular section of the shop.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, there's a lot of these businesses that are able to keep ticking over, but there's a lot of them are just gone.
Yeah.
And you look at these kind of things, and for us, it's great, the traffic's up, all these things are up, but our clients are those businesses that are struggling out there. And I just don't know what the overall impact of that is going to be in the longer term. I mean, I've no way of predicting that.
It's one of the reasons, Michele, why we've introduced new products in that as well, because technology can help things like click and collect, things like booking appointments in advance, having the online tools to do that. That spares, obviously, a staff member standing at the door and allows them to actually anticipate your appointment and to turn up, as it were, in advance. But you're quite correct. It is certainly, and it's a great, I haven't heard this before, but it's a great way to describe it as the digital revolution that nobody wanted. Michele, that's it, unless you have other particular reminiscences of the last 20 years you'd like to share. The one that stands out for me, I wanted to say it then when we were talking about old sites, and it's still a favourite today, but I think absolutely my favourite site in the year 2000 was IMDb, the Internet Movie Database.com.
But IMDb, I remember the first time I went on to IMDb. It would have been back in 1995, I think.
I don't know how old it is. Yeah. Oh, 1994,
1995.
Yeah.
I had access to one of the engineering computer labs at the weekend.
Ah.
Don't ask me how, because I was not an engineering student, but let's just say I had access.
Yes.
And I remember being in there in that lab and accessing IMDb and updating some of the listings for some people that, particular film directors and things like that I was interested in. That site, oh my God, yeah. I mean, it could
spend hours clicking from link to link and see who directed what and who starred in this. Totally.
And it's one of those things as well. It's like, you know, one of the things about IMDb is, like, if somebody appeared in something, even only kind of fleetingly, or if they just kind of touched on something in a film, they're probably listed in there somewhere.
Yeah.
So I mean, fast forward 20 odd years, and I, several people I know are actually you know, in there and have proper listings. Yes. I always find that kind of amusing.
It is.
To go in there. I don't have a listing in there. I've never actually appeared in a film, thankfully. Mm.
We might have to remedy that. We'll make that. We'll set that.
No. It's quite okay.
Michele, thanks for talking to me. Keep well and safe in Carlo, and we'll talk again soon.
All right. Thanks, Colin.
That was Michele Nealon, Black Knight CEO and co-founder, and that's it for this episode of the Black Knight Podcast. You can find the show at blacknight.blog/podcast. Subscribe and you'll get a new episode each month, all about the internet, business, technology, innovation, SMEs, the things that interest us as a company, our bread and butter. We kicked off a reboot of this podcast last month with an episode about the new .gay domain name and how they are building a hate-free zone online. Each time you register a new .gay domain name, you're supporting LGBT causes internationally and also here in Ireland. Black Knight is donating to Belong to Youth Services for each new .gay domain registered. And this week, that Irish organisation is coordinating an anti-bullying campaign in secondary schools, and that's called Stand Up Awareness Week. Finally, I want to send good wishes to the participants in Congregation 2020, which takes place this weekend. The little event for big ideas is an annual fixture in its host village of Cong, County Mayo. But this year, participants will take part from their homes. Black Knight is a sponsor of Congregation, and I'm looking forward to joining them virtually, of course. That's it. Until next month, Gadishin, Slán agus Beannacht.